Love music. Live sport. The Lineout with Lewis Stewart on Rock Sport Radio.
Welcome to Rock Sport Radio Wednesday night, and we're back in the middle of August now, so it's time for me to come back on the airwaves with your weekly edition of Rugby in the Lineout. It's going to be another exciting few months on the rugby front, but of course the next little while is going to be completely dominated by what's going on in the Rugby World Cup, which is going to be out in Japan, and I am expecting to be there, all being well. But of course, for the last little while, we have had a lot going on with the training camps in particular, dominating the programme for most of the Scottish players. So, tonight's programme is, I'm afraid, going to be dominated by all things, including Gregor Townsend's announcement this afternoon of the first team to take on France on Saturday evening in Nice. Although I am also going to be having a quick look at what happened at the annual general meeting last weekend. It was not the most exciting of actual performances, but there was an awful lot of interesting stuff in there, including the suggestion from the SRU that they're on the close to doing a mega money deal that Mark Dodson, the CEO, said would be as groundbreaking as the decision in 1995 to switch from amateur to professional. Of course, you've seen a great deal of that in the summer, suggestions that the investment company CVC, having sold their stake in Formula One, are now looking to reinvest that money into rugby, which could be interesting on a number of fronts, but is also going to pose challenges for the game in Scotland. However, before we get on to any of that, the news of the day has undoubtedly been Gregor Townsend announcing his first team of the autumn. There are, you will remember, four warm-up games to be played over the autumn, two against France this weekend out in Nice, followed by the return match at Murrayfield before they head out to play Georgia in Tbilisi. An interesting game, that one, likely to be a sellout before they come back to play Georgia back at Murrayfield on a Friday night game that's been billed as the big send-off to the World Cup. And then they head over to Japan, where they have that little opener against Ireland to look forward to. It's all going to be pretty exciting stuff. Now, of course, the problem about any warm-up game, as we all know, is that when the coach comes to pick the team, he's not picking an out-and-out his best team. He's not necessarily even picking a team to win this particular match. He is picking a team that has got all sorts of other agendas going on there. He's giving some players an opportunity to get some match practice. Some players are being given opportunity to play their way onto the plane, players who don't expect to go at the moment, but know they have an opportunity to get onto the plane if they play well enough. And there are some other players who have been given an opportunity to cement their places on the plane. They're being told that they're probably on the plane at the moment, but they need to perform in order to make sure they keep their places against the considerable competition that there is in most places. So in case you haven't seen it, I will quickly run through the team, which is starting at fullback, where we have Stuart Hogg, who is also one of the vice-captains and, of course, going to be one of the key players. The wings, Darcy Graham and Byron McGuigan. You'll remember they, of course, were the two who started against England in the Calcutta Cup game. New centre combination in Duncan Taylor and Hugh Jones, playing together for the first time. Duncan, particularly pleased to see back in the running again. He has had just an absolute nightmare over the last 2 years with a succession of injuries, one after the other. A really bad head injury, followed by a really bad knee injury. And he hasn't played since he hobbled off the field in Suva in 2017 a match that Scotland went on to lose, having pretty much guided the side or played a major part in the side, beating both Italy in Singapore and Australia in Sydney on the way out to Fiji. Then at half-back, you have the tried and tested partnership of Adam Hastings and Ali Price, the Glasgow pair. And the forward is pretty much all Edinburgh. Well, these days, all Edinburgh. Jamie Batty, who plays at Loosehead, hasn't actually played for Edinburgh yet, but he did join them from Glasgow in the summer. Stuart McInally captains them at hooker, and Simon Bergen gets, interestingly enough, the first shot at the tight head berth. But I think it is probable that all three tight heads in the training squad, Bergen, WP Nell and Xander Fagerson, are all likely to travel to Japan. Second rows of the Edinburgh pair, Ben Toulis and Grant Gilchrist, again the pair who started the Calcutta Cup game, which finished the Six Nations. A recall for John Barkley, who, of course, another one who missed the whole of last season, in his case with an Achilles tendon problem. So good to see him back, but not as captain, although he is vice-captain, but McInally keeps the leadership. Jamie Ritchie, given an opportunity to show what he can do at open side flanker, suggestion that possibly they're aware that they need a bit of backup for Hamish Watson, who is undoubtedly the shoe-in starter if they're playing a game that really, really matters. And Josh Strauss, who has not always been a Gregor Townsend favourite, given the opportunity to play his way onto the plane at number eight. And on the bench, you have George Turner, Gordon Reid, who last week signed to play for the Ayrshire Bulls in Super Six and therefore will presumably be retiring from international rugby after the World Cup. So he gets a chance to go out on a high. Xander Fagerson, who we've already mentioned. Scott Cummings gets a chance to win his first cap if he comes off the bench. Matt Fagerson is at the reserve number eight. George Horn is the backup scrum half. Rory Hutchison, another one with an opportunity to win his first cap when he comes off the bench. And Blair Kinghorn, although we're not entirely sure whether he is seen as a wing or a fullback. It's all going to be interesting. I think there are a few issues in there that people are going to be interested looking at, seeing how players play during the game. And so when we spoke to Gregor Townsend early in the day, there was an awful lot to get through, but we started off with talking about the camp and how, having been together since the middle of June with spells in Edinburgh, Inverness, Portugal, St Andrews and so on, to break it all up, the only thing I've been hearing from players for the last little while has been two things. One, they are fitter and stronger than they have ever been, and two, they are just absolutely desperate to get out on a pitch and start bashing into things to channel all that energy and frustration onto somebody other than their teammate. So when I started with Gregor, it was starting to ask him how good and important the camp had been.
It's been very productive to have this period with the players to work on, first of all, the conditioning, second, them getting closer as a group, and then third, the rugby has been excellent. We've seen big improvements in their physical conditioning, big improvements in areas we needed to improve from the Six Nations, but also just parts of those detail that you can introduce in a day or a week that you'd normally have 20 minutes before you play a Six Nations game. We are ready to play now. We did have a game a week ago, albeit a training game against Edinburgh, and you could tell the players want to play, and they're ready to play now.
Gregor Townsend and his squad absolutely raring to go before they head out to France for the weekend. And presumably that applies to nobody more than Duncan Taylor, who is recalled to the squad for his first game after 2 years of absolute misery with injuries.
Yeah, really good. I was delighted he got through last week's training game. It would have been a big thing for him, having not played for around 11, 12 months, to get that full contact and get through it okay. He's trained really well for the last 2 months with us. He's obviously had a season of coming back from that injury where he was full training with Saracens at the end of the season, so he's ready to go. He could be a big player for us over the next few weeks and months, but it's now up to him to grab that opportunity. We've got a lot of competition in that area. Sam Johnson is not available just now, but he should be back within a week or two. He finished the Six Nations in great form. You've got Peter Horn, who's a very experienced player for us, Chris Harris, who's been training really well, and Rory Hutchinson, who's an exciting player on the bench this week, and he can cover any three of those midfield positions, and that's what he'll be doing this weekend.
Gregor Townsend excited about the possibilities of his various combinations in the midfield. But talking about Duncan Taylor does illustrate one issue. Rugby is a dangerous game. People do get injured. We saw Wales suffering from that last weekend when Gareth Anscombe went down in the match against England. And with Scotland about to embark on their warm-up programme, how worried is he that there could be more injuries to follow?
No, we've got a lot of faith in our squad. This is the best quality group of players I've ever worked with, and having most of the players available, I reckon we're on 90 to 95% of Scotland players that are fit and available to play. We're in a very good position. Any team we play over the next few weeks or months are going to be very good too. So whether it's France home and away or Georgia, or Ireland on September the 22nd, we are playing against very good sides. I think the positive about these games is you can focus a lot more on yourself. We've not done that much analysis on France. They've changed their coaching staff or added people to their coaching staff, so they may change the way they play. We just want to make sure that we get our detail right, our systems and defence, attack, how we work to win the game and how our players show their strengths.
Gregor Townsend, confident in the depth of his squad, but however confident he is in the overall depth, one thing is undoubtedly true. There are some players in that squad who are irreplaceable. Finn Russell is one. Stuart Hogg, who is named as one of the vice-captains in Saturday's team, is another. How has Gregor Townsend found Stuart Hogg looking forward to the game coming up?
Yeah, he's been great. I think if you were to ask me about any player how they're doing, I'll give the same answer. They have really impressed us with how well they've looked after themselves coming into our camp, and also the 2 weeks holiday we gave them after Portugal. He's in the best physical shape of his life, and he's showing that with how he trains, the fitness tests he does, with his body composition, things that, with markers that we know that show how fit our players are. I think it's because of the World Cup. I think it's because of where he is as a player. This is his time to be in his best shape of his life. Stuart's not missed many games for us. He has picked up a couple injuries, which, as you mentioned, were the Lions at the end of the Six Nations, but he's usually been available for us and played really well. To have him and Darcy working together at training is exciting for the people in Hoyk, but also the people in Scotland. Darcy's last two games for Scotland, he scored 3 tries. And Stuart has been one of our best players over the last few seasons. So it'll be great to see them combined at the weekend, and also with Byron there. Byron started in our game at Twickenham, and he's been training well. So that's a back three that gives us a lot of excitement. We believe we've got really good depth in all the positions going into this sort of final period before we cut down the squad. Every team's going to pick up an injury, at least one injury. If you get really lucky, you pick up 0 to 1. If you get bad luck, you pick up closer to 10. But we all know that there will be injuries. The nature of our sport and the collisions that come in our sport, there will be injuries over the next few weeks. I know from my experience, 3 World Cups that I had the potential of playing in, I got injured at the same time in all 3, 2 months before the tournament. One I missed in 95, Gala Hoyt game, that I got injured in, and the other 2 I just made, but knee operations, but just made it. So it's in the background. It's not something that concerns us. We want our players to go out and play to their best, show the work they've put in training, and put it into a massive performance this week. That'll help us win the game, will help them get to Japan. And if we do pick up injuries, then that would be unfortunate, and it's really unfortunate for someone like Gareth Anscombe, who's had such a good season, to miss out on this big tournament.
How much is this a team to win this game, and how much is it a team to experiment with different combinations and have a look at players who may be on the fringe or not travelling to Japan?
Both. We obviously looked at the first two games. It's the same opponents. The team will be different next week. And the reason there was a number of reasons why we put certain people together and positions together this weekend. One reason was where they were in their seasons. So the majority of the forward pack are coming from Edinburgh. Their season finished earlier. There's a few Exiles players like Barry McGuigan, Josh Strauss, and Rory Hutchinson, whose seasons also finished a little bit earlier. But that wasn't the overall guiding principle. That was one factor we had in mind. Other elements were looking at combinations, looking at players that hadn't maybe played for us for a while. John Barkley, Duncan Taylor, mentioned Stuart Hogg and Hugh Jones, who missed the end of the Six Nations. So giving them an opportunity to play early on was something we looked at, and next week will be different. How many changes we'll see, but it'll certainly be a different team to the one that plays this weekend.
Gregor Townsend, in optimistic mood, I think it is fair to say, ahead of the game out in Paris. Now, we talked a little bit there about Stuart Hogg, and we will remember that he did miss the end of the Six Nations after that tackle by Peter Romani in the Ireland game, and so he didn't get a chance to play in that remarkable Qatar Cup game. And he feels that he still has a lot to prove, to demonstrate that he is back to being the player that he was when he was getting injured. So it is good to see him back out there playing again. Dave Rennie, the Glasgow coach, frequently talks about just what an absolute pain in the neck he can be. He is so excited that when he can't actually play at the end of the week, that he is one of these players who is just bubbling with enthusiasm and nowhere for that enthusiasm to go. So ahead of the first test, after being injured, how is he feeling now?
I feel good. Obviously it's been a pretty hectic summer, but a very enjoyable one. As you say, we've moved down to Exeter and got the family settled for a week or so before moving back up to do stuff at home and get ready for training. So it's been pretty hectic, but enjoyable. I think for me it's been pretty easy. I've not actually done anything with Exeter just now, so it's been fairly easy just to slot back into Scotland stuff. And look, I'm just trying to work incredibly hard to learn, to improve, to get fitter, and to be a better rugby player. So it's been tough. We've done a lot of running, a lot of skill work, but we feel we're in a good place ahead of the game at the weekend.
Stuart Hogg on his hectic summer, where of course he's moved to Exeter, he has trained to Scotland, and he's managed to get a little bit of break in as well. But it must be a huge relief to Hogg to at last get the chance to go out on the pitch.
For us, we've just got to kind of concentrate on ourselves, and you know, we want to try and play the fastest rugby in the world, and we believe we're in a good place with our fitness, and look, it's just getting ready to fire into the games now. We're kind of getting bored having no games at the weekend and training incredibly hard, but now look, this week it's completely different. It's back into test week, a chance to pull in the Scotland jersey and go across to France and hopefully get a good win and set us in a good place to just kick on and hopefully achieve something special at the World Cup. I think now if we start looking too far ahead, then you know, we're going to slip up in these games. You know, they're very much going out there to win games. You don't often get to pull on the Scotland jersey, and we want to try and get some wins. We're not there just to get through the game and concentrate on Ireland. It's, you know, four massive test matches before we even get there, so we're very much just looking forward to playing against France this Saturday. Yeah, it's massive for us. I think, you know, we need to be in a position that we're playing some nice rugby, where we feel confident in the structures, and each individual's, you know, got a good amount of game time going into the Ireland game. And now, look, as I say, we've been working incredibly hard to get to where we want to be, and you know, this week it's a case of going out there and putting into practice what we've done for the last, you know, 7-8 weeks.
Stuart Hogg underlining the importance of the warm-up games coming up, but when he looks ahead to the World Cup, where does he think Scotland need to make their improvements?
Now, the game is built massively on defence, and you know, it's probably the at the forefront of our game. You know, defence will win you games, and we've been working a lot on the structures there, because we believe that, you know, we slipped up a few times in pivotal moments in games gone past. We've been working incredibly hard on that, and, you know, we believe that we can score tries through our defence. I know that kind of sounds a little bit silly, but if we're constantly putting teams under pressure, then, you know, they're going to slip up at some point. So, you know, the game is built on the back of our defence, and, you know, the attack will kind of take care of itself after that. We truly believe that we've got the players and ambition and attack to score tries, but we've leaked a fair amount over the last few games as well, that, you know, you can see that we're not going to win test matches if we're scoring two and conceding three. So defence has to be watertight and make sure we're on the money at every single opportunity. And as I say, we're strong enough to turn defence into attack.
What changes this week with the game at the end of it?
Hopefully we'll not run as far. That'll be a start. I think, as I say, we feel we're in a good place, but now it's very much, you know, getting as much team shape and set piece work as we possibly can. And you know, there's a hell of a lot of new combinations that we're not used to. So you know, this week it's about every day taking another step closer to winning games and making sure we're in a better place than when we started the session. And you know, every opportunity we get in training, we've got to make the most of it, because every single rep counts when it comes to test match rugby, and everybody has to be on the money in both attack and defence, knowing their roles, and making sure we're in the best place possible.
Is there much you can do to help the youngsters coming through who haven't played much at this level? I don't know what to expect in the World Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, there's a lot of experience within the squad nowadays, and a lot of young boys coming through that are asking the right questions at the right time, and they're willing to learn and improve and get better individually and for the team as well. So, as I say, we feel we're in a good place. Everybody's, you know, working hard towards the same goal of winning this weekend, and, you know, hopefully we can get that.
Stuart Hogg looking forward to a win. And it is important that they travel to Japan on a wave of confidence, and that would not be helped if they were to have a disastrous warm-up set of games. So it is important they go out there, they perform, and they win. Now, one of the issues that undoubtedly is the case, I've already made a comment about it, is the danger, of course, that players do get injured. It is a physical contact sport. People do get hurt. The last one that we saw of any great note was when Fraser Brown got carted off in the Pro 14 final at Celtic Park with what looked like a very nasty foot injury. At the time, we were wondering if that was possibly going to be his World Cup. We now believe that he is expected to be back in time to play possibly the last of the Georgia games. But when I spoke to him, it was starting off by asking him whether he was still hoping to scrape in for any rugby before the World Cup kicks off.
No, my aim's always been to try and be involved in the latter part of the games. That's still the same. Still on track, so I think I'm a little bit ahead of schedule. But it'll be dependent on the next couple of weeks of how much running I can get under my belt. And I definitely won't be taking part in the next 2 weeks. But then after that, it'll just be in terms of how quickly I can progress and where I am come end of August. So I'm back running now. So I started running last week. So I was running this morning, which is why I'm still a bit tired now. Back up doing S&C running, so sort of more just trying to build my engine up a little bit and get some running in my legs and my lungs. And then, all going well, hopefully in the next week or two, progress into more skill stuff, more training stuff, and then obviously into full training after that. So again, it's like everything. It's how well you can progress and recover day to day, and then if everything's going well, you can push it a little bit more.
Fraser Brown reassuring people that he is close to coming back to playing again. But one of the interesting things about Fraser Brown's summer is, although he has been injured throughout, he has always been with the Scotland team, taking part in their camps around the country. So how has he found that?
The plan, we were pretty good at setting out my targeted plan from sort of the minute I got injured against Leinster. We were pretty clear on when I would be hoping to be fit and the markers that I had to go through throughout the whole summer. So it's been good for me being in camp the whole time as well, because it meant that I've been in and around camp. I've been able to get physio and medics every day and have that consistency with the same medics and the same S&C staff. So it's been great from my point of view. And then, yeah, just being with the squad, you know, I've been able to get in around the rugby stuff. I've been able to understand what's going on. So hopefully it should make transition from going from injured group into playing group a bit easier. I think it's frustrating now because obviously the games are starting. In the last two or three weeks has been very much more game focused. I doubt you would find many rugby players in the first 4 weeks of pre-season that look at what guys are doing and think, yeah, I really want to do it. But it's weird. Like, you do want to be a part of it, because when you're injured and you're training on your own, you're training in a different group, you know. There's a weird thing about team sports is that you want to be part of it, like, in that shared, I can't quite find the word for it, but
torture.
That shared torture, yeah, the shared torture, being part of that, like, it pulls you together as a group. It makes you bond more. It brings you closer because you know everyone's going through it and everyone's suffering through the same stuff. So there's a little bit of you, while you're kind of smiling that you're not doing it, you're actually feeling like there's a pull for you to go and do it. So and then particularly in the last couple of weeks, because it's been more rugby focused, because, you know, there's test matches at the end of this week, and the test match is such a big thing. You know, it's not a warm-up game, it's not a summer, you know, it's a summer test, it is a test match. So, you know, the rugby player in me always wants to be doing that. So I think this week it's exciting because I've been able to run and do more, but then I still know that I can't go and do full training, I can't play at the end of the week.
Fraser Brown referring to his injury issues over the last little while and hoping to be back, although Gregor Townsend did also make it clear that if he doesn't play in the Georgia game, as long as he is going to be fully fit by the kickoff in the World Cup, then he is likely to travel anyway. But they do have Grant Stewart still in the squad as cover in case he fails to make it. Right, on that point, I think I am going to leave the immediate issues of the team today to one side for a little while and turn to the annual general meeting, which happened last Saturday at BT Murrayfield. And as I said in the introduction, it was a meeting that didn't really catch light in terms of big confrontations or fireworks. But actually, when you look at what happened in the meeting, there was an awful lot of meat in it, starting with things like Mark Dodson, the chief executive, talking about future investment coming up shortly that he reckons will be transformational, but also a few issues with the way that the union is being run. And to talk to me about what happened at the meeting and about the issues that were highlighted at the meeting, I'm delighted to say I have on the line Ed Crozier, who is a former president of the union and therefore a very important person in Scottish rugby circles, that who was one of the main practitioners in the meeting, in that he also put in, what was it, Ed, 10, 12 questions to the top table to get them to answer?
Unlucky for some, Lewis, it was 13 questions and one extra question in my capacity as ex-president.
Absolutely. Just starting off with that point, though, Ed, that generally there seemed to me, as an observer, that there was a lot of positivity coming from the top table. There was this talk of transformational money. There was a big highlight on this claim that the union is debt-free. And we'll come back to that in a minute, if you don't mind. But it seemed to be met by a certain amount of scepticism from the floor. Now, as somebody who has been on both sides, you sat on that top table and addressed the clubs. You're also very much a club person at the moment. You know, do you think my impressions are fair? Do you think that is roughly what was happening?
I think it was pretty transparent. But you know, if you look at the accounts, especially on page 75 of the annual report, you see there is still core debt there. It doesn't become repayable until June 2020 of £3 million. However, that is covered. It's still core debt. So, but going back a step, the board and council executive have done a great financial job. It just seems to be, as seems to be in most sections of the businesses, there's a bit of spin onto the underlying elements of the accounts and a bit more transparency, would have actually they'd have scored 10 out of 10 with the clubs on Saturday.
Do you think, though, that part of the issue is that they seem to be treating it in the way that a business would treat its shareholders? They tell them the information that they think the shareholders need to know, but the clubs are actually in a slightly different position to an organisation like the SRU. You know, they're not just the shareholders, but they have a big stake in what the SRU is doing, and it's a sort of two-way process that makes it different from your standard business model.
Well, if you go back to the sort of revolution and the Dunlop report of 2005, that did empower the board to run, if the clubs approved it, to run the game, but only under the guidance of the stakeholders, which are the clubs. The SRU is unique in that it's a mutually run organisation that empowers a board to commercially run the organisation. But in doing so, the council are elected to look after the interests of the clubs and stakeholders, have got a statutory duty to examine everything that's gone through, and where possible, without conflicting with commercial sensitivities, let the stakeholders know exactly what's going on. And I don't think sometimes that's always the case.
Just what I was going to ask you, because you get things like, I mean, at the meeting, they're having a review into the governance structure led by Bill Gammell. No problem about Bill Gammell, a great figure in the game and a great big figure in the business community. But several times they were asked, both before and after the meeting, if they would publish the review. They never at any point promised that they would. That there were kind of hints a couple of times that they expected it to be published, but no promise that they guarantee it. And also, I think one of your questions was it about the salaries paid to the top three officials, which are sort of grouped as one. Now, we know that that is going to be published when they submit the accounts to Companies House, but they refuse to give it out at the meeting. It's little things like that sort of sow seeds of a certain amount of scepticism and distrust.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's distrust. I think it's just ambiguity around the process, and maybe wait until the full set of accounts are published. And going back to the reviews conducted by Sir Bill Gammell and Norman Murray, you can't question their integrity, and they won't be pushed into a direction they don't want to go to, not given their background. Norman in business and Sir Bill in both business and rugby. And, of course, they've got to give that report then in to Gavin McCall, who's chairing, as independent chair of the Government's Working Party. And then, hopefully, that report will be released in full to the stakeholders, because I don't think there's anything to hide there. Well, I hope there's not. There's a few things I think have to be made clearer, that there's ambiguity amongst the terms of service of the non-exec directors on the SRU board, compared to the elected board members that come from council that sit on the SRU board. SRU board members can only serve a maximum of 2 3-year terms. Yet on Saturday we were referred to the minutes and memorandum of the SRU board, which says non-exec directors can serve up to 9 years. There's ambiguity there, and that doesn't fulfil or fit in with the spirit of the Dunlop report. So there has to be an equal playing field moving forward. I'm sure that Sir Bill and Norman Murray will address those facts before passing it on to Gavin McCall.
Because, in fact, as I'd understood the Dunlop report, which was obviously incorrectly, I thought it was saying that, in fact, all the non-executive directors, whether they came from the council or whether they came as appointees, were only supposed to stay for 6 years before they were replaced. But we have now got two on the board who have been retained for 9 years.
Well, it was made clear on Saturday from a question from the floor that because the board are governed by memorandum and articles of association that are guidelined by the recommendation, I think, of the Institute of Directors or a similar body, said that the maximum term can be three-year terms, which is never referred to in the Dunlop report.
Certainly not. Little things like that, you know, it just seems to me that little things like that are the things that do sort of get this sort of slight air of friction between, you know, what's going on amongst the clubs and what's going on at the top table amongst the executive. Is there an easy way to solve it, do you think?
I just think it's clear communication. I mean, we've got a great chairman in Colin Grassie, you know, and he's been through the mill and business and in sport, following on from our last chairman. So I think it's just to sit around a table and let the clubs see that they don't have horns. They're just trying to do the best for us, but in a way that is transparent and user-friendly. I mean, a bit more humility sometimes, as was expressed in last year's AGM after the Keith Russell case, would go a long way to securing that degree of confidence that we know and hope that the board, subject to the approval of council, will deliver for the stakeholders.
And just finally, Ed, before I let you go, you did hear both Colin Grassie and Mark Dodson talking about the potential of external investment coming in. They talked about it as transformational. They talked about once in a generation or more that they've got this money that's going to change the game, root and branch. Do you think this is an opportunity for Scottish rugby in particular, given its size in the market, or is it more of a threat?
I think it could be an enormously positive addition to the game. We can't compete with the Stade Français or the Saracens of this world on the current budgets that we've got. So if a company like the one that's talking about CBC coming in to inject money, and I think there's a few other companies that are trying to get in the bidding process, they've bought and transformed Formula One. They can do the same, hopefully, to us in Scottish rugby. But what I'd like to see is some of that money cascading down to the clubs, to the stakeholders, and I'm sure that will be taken into consideration when and if the actual stakes, and if it's Six Nations or if it's EPCR, is actually sold.
So as a very strong club man yourself, I mean, you will be anxious to see that whatever money comes in does something to help the leeching of players from club level. We haven't got figures for it yet. It may be as late as December before we get them, according to the union. But nevertheless, we all know that there are fewer players playing than there were 20 years ago. And you'll
be hoping... they were honest about that on Saturday, Lewis. They were very upfront about that. And I think this would be a way to help recruit. And one area particularly dear to my heart is recruit referees. Maybe we've not been international referees for a number of years. Have a separate fund that is used to actually market on a continual basis the recruitment, retention and development of referees, separate from any other budget that's there at the SIU. And if this money comes through that and developing players from every area of the game, including our women's game, which is very excitingly growing at the moment, would go a long way to bringing the clubs back on. Well, they are back on, say, but really affirming the relationship between them, the council and the board, which is fundamental to good governance.
And obviously very helpful for the health of the club game, which is where your heart really lies.
Totally, absolutely.
Yeah. Ed Crozier, thank you very much indeed. Good, as always, to talk to you.
Great, Lewis.
Let you get back to whatever you were doing. busy meetings tonight, I suspect.
It's actually doing sad things. I know what they were going to be, but on Saturday, they're doing accounts.
Okay. Ed, thank you very much indeed. That was Ed Crozier, former president of the Scottish Rugby Union, chatting to me about what went on at the AGM. Time to go for a quick ad break and then back with more chat, this time with David Barnes, who is with the Offside Line. And we can talk about that and the team announcement as well.
Love music. Live sport. The Lineout with Lewis Stewart on Rock Sport Radio.
Welcome back to the second part of the show. Before the break, we were talking to Ed Crozier, former president of the Scottish Rugby Union about what happened at the AGM and his reactions to it. And now I have somebody who knows almost as much as that, David Barnes, who runs the offside line, looking mostly at club rugby. But also, David, you know all about the international game as well. But if I can start off where we picked up with Ed Crozier, the AGM, and I was suggesting to Ed that possibly there was a lot of positivity coming off the top table, but it wasn't necessarily being reflected back from the floor, where there seemed to be a little bit more scepticism. Did you get that feeling as well?
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's generally the feeling. I suppose the interesting thing about it, wasn't it, Lewis, that, you know, at the very beginning when the SOU were doing the presentation, and we all know there are good things out there, it was pretty compelling. And I actually felt, I don't know if you picked up on it, that a few of the cynics were beginning to be bought round. And the real problem started, as far as I could see it, was when, towards the end, when there was any other competent business, and, you know, the club started asking a few questions, and that's when the SRU, the top table, kind of closed up. And so it feels a wee bit to me like there is good things out there. The SRU are good at telling us about the good things out there when it suits them, but when it turns around and we want to kind of dig a bit deeper, or we're asking questions which aren't, they weren't necessarily expecting, that's when the problem. So it goes back to what Ed was saying, which is about transparency. You know, nobody's doubting that there's good things there, but, you know, you need to bring the clubs along with you, and that means acknowledging the bad things and acknowledging the challenges as well. And I think that's where we've got the sticking point now.
There were things there that I must admit, I didn't really understand. I mean, things like, when they were talking about the union being debt-free, good news, yeah, fantastic, fantastic, they didn't explain what, in any detail, what they meant by debt-free. There is debt there. There is obviously the debentures still there, which we know all about. There is actually still a bank loan there, which they haven't paid off. But if you actually look at it, there is more money sitting in other parts of the account. So all the debts are covered, you know, by money that they're either owed or have sitting in their current account. But they didn't explain any of that. They just said, oh, we're debt-free. What do you mean? You know, that's the way we account. You know, sort of almost seem to resent being asked about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the impression I get. I mean, I suspect you and I, Lewis, are from the same school of accountancy in that we struggle through to the end of the month and keep on going. So, I mean, I'm not an expert either, but I've spoken to chartered accountants and people with, you know, a background in that area. And, you know, I think Mark Dodson said to us afterwards that it's all about interpretation. That's the way they interpret it. And, you know, nobody's suggesting that the accounts are fallacious. But it has been explained to me that, you know, they've paid down the bank, you know, they've still got an overdraft, they've still got a loan, but they've got enough money in the bank to cover that. So in terms of bank loans and their bank position, they are in credit. But there's other debts, as you say, there's other debts all over the rest of the business. And so their interpretation is this. I mean, it feels a wee bit to me like it was a kind of a bit of spin from the SRU there. You know, in one interpretation, they are debt-free. Debt-free is a nice headline. It makes them kind of look, you know, very good. And it just feels to me like they maybe pushed that a wee bit too much because, you know, they like the good headlines. And, you know, and in the end, it maybe feeds a bit of mistrust because it's not really the full story. And I think the clubs are perfectly willing to accept that the financial position has improved. But, you know, if they feel like they're being kind of being, you know, misled or kind of, I wouldn't even say misled, but, you know, that this, you know, the position has been presented more, in a more shiny way than really is the case, then it feeds a mistrust, doesn't it?
A bit of gloss on it rather than,
yeah, exactly.
Do you think, though, one thing that did occur to me was that could it be that this is also kind of related to their talking about with the external investments coming in, that they are desperate to paint themselves in as positive a light as possible, so that they look good to people who are going to be putting, you know, tens of millions, possibly even hundreds of millions of pounds into their coffers?
Yeah, well, I'm sure that is the case, absolutely. I'm sure. I'd imagine these people are pretty adept at reading a balance sheet. So, you know, I don't think they'll be pulling the wool over their eyes. But there's definitely, you know, I think Mark Dodson, you know, I think we all know that there's big money coming, and you know, that Mark Dodson and these guys see themselves as the best people to make the most of that. And I hope they are, if they're the people that are in charge. There's a lot of good things there. It just feels like there's you know, a lack of there's a lack of trust at the moment, and I think that could be, as Ed kind of alluded to, it could be very easily, you know, that gap there could be very easily closed with maybe just a few concessions by the SRU, a bit of acknowledgement that not everything in the garden is rosy.
And also a few promises to actually put things out into the public domain that there's no particular reason for keeping quiet. I mean, obviously, things like the governance review that Bill Gammell and Norman Murray are doing, the guts of that are going to have to be published anyway, because there's going to have to be voted through at an AGM, whatever changes are made.
Well, absolutely. And you mentioned it there, and the director's salaries. Now, that's going to be in the accounts at some point. Now, I suspect that they didn't want to stand up there, because I think a few of them are very well paid. You know, but they're not alone. That's what executives of big organisations get paid. And it, you know, and they didn't do it. And, you know, it would have been an easy one. You know, they might have got a wee bit of kind of scoffing from the floor because they're earning these great bucks. But it's going to come out of it anyway. You know, just as I was sitting there listening to you, I was on Companies House website. I thought, you know, it reminded me, I had a look. They've not filed their accounts yet. But, you know, I wouldn't be the only one that's waiting to find out what they are. So it just seems a bit strange to me that they can't, you know. It felt to me a bit like in the SGM was the same year of that as well. It's almost like there's this kind of attitude that we won't concede an inch because we're so sure of ourselves that we're right. And maybe a wee bit of concession, a wee bit of, a wee bit of give would just do a whole lot to kind of improve the general mood between the two sides. Because there shouldn't be two sides, actually. We're all Scottish Rugby Union,
There should be one. It all should be together.
Yeah.
Switching to a happier note, though. You were there with me today at the announcement of the Scotland team to play France at the weekend. One or two interesting ones. Duncan Taylor, John Barclay back after long-term injuries. A couple of players possibly being given the chance to play their way onto the plane. What did you make of it?
Yeah. Well, you and I spoke about that before the press conference, and we're talking about the back row options. And I think I agreed with you that, we know Hamish Watson will go, John Barclay will go. You know, you said Ryan Wilson, and I probably do agree with you. But, you know, I've kind of got a soft spot for Jamie Ritchie. I think he's a real workhorse, a real worker. You know, he's kind of come into, he came through in an Edinburgh team that were really struggling, and, you know, probably didn't come through as quickly as we thought. And then this year, you know, those injuries in the back row, he's really grabbed it. And, you know, it kind of feels to me a wee bit like momentum's on his side. Ryan Wilson, you know, struggled a wee bit to get in the Glasgow team this year, and momentum's gone. We know Gregor likes Ryan, but I think we all do. Ryan's a good leader, but with Duncan coming back in the centre, John Barclay coming back, you know, I think Jamie Ritchie's a guy that's, you know, got a big opportunity. He's, you know, he's the kind of the coming man. So I think that's a kind of interesting one. It was interesting, well, we knew it would happen, but Gregor spoke very warmly of Duncan Taylor, didn't he? Which we know he rates him, but, you know, he spoke about, you know, his influence off the pitch and on the pitch. And, you know, I certainly got the feeling that, if we didn't know before, he's definitely a linchpin if, you know, he can get back to, you know, where we know he can be. And then there's obviously the two Hoyt boys at the back, which always pleases me. So I'm looking forward to seeing those two in action.
That's a Hoyt boy yourself, yes, quite.
Yeah, well, not quite the same pace, yeah.
Although I noticed Stuart Hogg is letting his blonde highlights grow out now that Darcy Graham has copied him.
Yeah, it's a funny one, that, isn't it? You know, I'd like to know what the bet was or who got Darcy to do that. But yeah, it's an exciting team. It's really hard to judge what, you know. I mean, you know, there's so many different factors at play here. You know, there's trying out combinations, there's giving individuals a chance to prove themselves. I think there's a few players, you know, being protected. There's a few, you know, so, you know, I'm not sure that we can read a hell of a lot into, you know, what that's going to mean in terms of the 31 players. But, you know, certainly in terms of Jamie Ritchie, I think that's going to be intriguing to see how he goes. The loose head, you know, there's a big opportunity for Jamie Batty and Gordy Reid. They're probably both competing for one of the spots. And Hugh Jones needs a couple of big games. You know, he kind of went off the boil towards the end of last season. We all know what he can do. We can all remember that England game, the Calcutta game 2 years ago. And to have him back at that kind of form would be a huge boost. So that'll be interesting to see as well.
Do you think Gregor sees that centre combination, Duncan Taylor, Hugh Jones, as possibly his first choice at the moment, unless they play their way out?
Yeah, who knows with Gregor, you know, what they call it, the Toonie Tombola. Yeah, I think so. But then there's Sam Johnson as well, who's not available this week. So it's interesting. You know, we talk a lot about Duncan. I think Duncan Taylor's going to be in the team somewhere. I'm really not sure. I think it's any two of the three, Duncan Taylor, Sam Johnson and Hugh Jones. Does that make sense to you, Lewis? I'm not sure.
Perfect sense. Yeah. Well, I think, yes, I think, because the thing is about Duncan is that he can play both inside and outside. If Peter Horn goes as one of your inside centres, Sam Johnson's a specialist inside. So yeah. Hugh Jones pretty much has to go as your only specialist outside, and Duncan covers both. And it's just an interesting set of, with the way that the team was cut last week, and he's cut down on at least some of his options. Interesting in the front row as well. Stuart McInally keeps the captaincy, but Jamie Batty and Simon Bergen gets first go with tight head.
Yeah, well, I've ummed and ahed about this. What do you do? You know, you've got 31 men, and 31 men seems a lot of players, but, you know, when you get into the squad, you know, it's two in each position, really, you know, maybe three scrum halves or three hookers. So, you know, do you take three tight head props? I suppose that's the big question. If you do, then Simon Bergen goes.
Well, I noticed that the SOU actually, when they redid their website, well, one of the changes was they did note that Simon Bergen actually came as somebody who can play both.
Really? Yeah, I didn't notice that. That's a good spot, because I was wondering, I was trying to work out, you know, we don't have, you know, the days of kind of guys that can play both sides have kind of gone now, haven't they? Now that we have two, you know, we have a specialist tight head and loose head on the bench. So that is quite interesting. That might be quite leading. I mean, it's interesting looking at what England did, and they've only taken two scrum halves, which leaves them really exposed in another key position. So there's going to have to be a gamble somewhere in the team, I suppose, just to kind of get, enough firepower there. I mean, the loose head, I mean, you're a far more accomplished front row observer than I. Alan Dell goes as, you know, presumably, you know, he's going. Then, you know, Gordy Reid's a scrummager. Jamie Batty is probably not as experienced. You know, I think Jamie Batty's a guy that's really playing to keep himself in the mix, I think, isn't he?
Yeah. I think so, because Gordy Reid, you know what you're getting from him. Jamie Batty is not as good a scrummager, but is better in the open. It's an age-old thing that you go for the guy. But then you tend to feel up against Ireland with McGrath and Porter, that that game in particular. And if you remember back in 2016, Japan had a surprisingly good scrum.
Stays steady
for the last little bit.
So that's it. You know, I was speaking to Glenn Tippett at Ayrshire Bulls today, and, you know, I think he'll be jumping over the moon if, you know, Gordy Reid makes it. He's absolutely delighted that, you know, the Gordy Reid, who signed for the Ayrshire Bulls, obviously, earlier. It was last week, wasn't it?
Last week, yeah.
But, you know, a Super Six player at the World Cup.
That is going to do. David, I'm afraid time yet again has beaten us. Great as always talking to you. I will see you, I suspect, at the captain's run on Friday.
There. Okay. Excellent.
Thanks a lot, David. Cheers. Thanks a lot. That is David Barnes from the offside line talking about the AGM initially, and then later on we moved on to our thoughts on the Scotland team. As I said, time has beaten us. Back next week with more and from the front game.
Love music. Live sport. The Lineout with Lewis Stewart on Rock Sport Radio.